the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Joining me right now, Jillian Hellman, CEO of RealtyMogul.com. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So give us an overview, first of all, of your entrepreneurial journey, how you got here, and what RealtyMogul.com is.
Sure. So I'd say my entrepreneurial journey started at the dinner table. My mom and dad are both entrepreneurs, raised a bunch of kids that are entrepreneurial, and it was sort of like the definition of success for our family was to go be an entrepreneur and build companies. So I really learned that from my mother and father. Went to business school, went into banking thereafter, and then decided it was time to start my own company. So I started Realty Mogul about 5 years ago, and we are an online marketplace for real estate investing. So we allow individual investors to come online and buy into commercial real estate properties all over the country.
Awesome. Yeah. So what would you say is your definition of an entrepreneur and basically what it takes to be an entrepreneur?
So I think that it takes having the disease to be an entrepreneur. I talk about entrepreneurship as a disease. If you don't have to do it, you don't have to have it. You sort of wish not to have it in a lot of respects. So, but I think being an entrepreneur is all about perseverance, right? You have to be willing to, you know, not literally, but sort of run through walls, right? And make things happen from scratch that otherwise wouldn't. I don't think you have to start a company to be an entrepreneur. You know, there's a number of executives in our company who are entrepreneurs, right? They've created something from nothing within our own company. And there's also entrepreneurs within big companies who create, you know, amazing, amazing things within companies. So I think you can be in a company, starting a company. I think the definition is pretty wide, but it's sort of that innate perseverance and that innate disease that you have to build, right? Entrepreneurs are builders.
Yeah, I love what you said about basically creating something from nothing. That's a great way of saying it. So you have worked for others before. What was that transition like?
So it was interesting. I mean, I worked for a company with 10,000 employees, right? I was working for Bank of Tokyo and Union Bank in the banking world, and there were 10,000 employees. So you're, I don't want to say you're a cog in the system, but you're a cog in the system, right? You've got a job. It's quite narrow. Uh-huh. You've got a job description. You know, you're getting the job done and hopefully doing a nice job. But it's very different than being an entrepreneur, being a CEO, right? I wake up every day in the morning and my company is on our shoulders, right? I never felt that way working for a big organization.
Since going out on your own, has there been fear of failure, a lot of self-doubt, a desire to quit at any point?
It's a disease, right? So the disease ebbs and flows, right? Sometimes you feel like you're on top of the world and you have, you know, the best days as an entrepreneur. I mean, I've had some memories that are just like the most incredible times as an entrepreneur. And there are other days where you want to pull the covers over your head and you don't want to get out of bed, right? So there's certainly been fear of failure. There's certainly been days where I ask myself, you know, can I do this? Can I continue to do this? Am I the right person to do this? But at the end of the day, you're an entrepreneur. So you just keep going, right? One foot in front of the other, one day, you know, in front of the next day, and you just keep plugging away.
So if you could go back to that first year of being in business and give your early entrepreneur self some advice, what would it be?
Oh, geez. Probably get out of my living room faster. We operated out of my living room for almost a year. And it didn't feel like we were a real company, right? It felt like we hadn't kind of established ourselves. And I remember the first day that we moved out, we moved into a co-working space locally in Los Angeles. And it was like, wow, we've made it, right? We really did it and sort of brought this new aura to the company that was really, really exciting. But that's kind of a minor example. I mean, other examples are hiring great people, right? And I think we hired some great people out the gate, but that's the single most important thing, I think, for success as an entrepreneur and in growing a business. We were very slow to hire. We didn't hire as many people probably as quickly as we needed to. And even today, that's a challenge in our organization because as an entrepreneur, you're always balancing what does it cost and how quickly do I want to move? So I probably would have hired faster, which is kind of the antithesis of the normal entrepreneurship advice you get to hire slowly. And I would have moved out and really sort of gotten a space and felt like a company earlier.
I love that example of moving into a co-working space because I think, you know, to your point, entrepreneurs are scared to spend money, but sometimes it really can even just help with your confidence, your mindset, and really get the ball rolling faster.
Yep, exactly.
So if you were to create a startup toolkit, what are three things that would be inside? It could be something more tangible, technology, or it could be intangible, like a characteristic that they have to have.
So I'll share three characteristics that are of every employee, which doesn't exactly answer your question. But I hire employees, I look for humble, hungry, and smart. So if I were building an entrepreneurship toolkit, I would think of those three things, right? So, you know, you absolutely need great people. So the first and most important thing in the toolkit would be, how do you hire great people, right? Sort of a tutorial on how to hire great people. And the answer to that would be humble, hungry, and smart, which is what I've learned sort of over my career. The other thing that I would put in the toolkit is books, right? So I've learned a tremendous amount from reading. I've learned a tremendous amount from doing as well, but I find that you can learn a lot from other entrepreneurs. You can learn a lot reading biographies. My favorite type of book is biographies about companies. So I've read, you know, tons of biographies about different companies.
So what's the number one favorite book?
I love The Everything Store, which is the Amazon story. One of my favorite books. Hatching Twitter is a great book. The story of Twitter and all the kind of tumultuous times there. Because you feel like you're alone sometimes as an entrepreneur. You feel like you're the only one going through it.
Like they all have it figured out.
They've always had it figured out.
But
it's been crazier there,
right?
It's crazier there than in my own company. So I would put books. I would put a guide on how to hire, you know, hungry, humble, smart people. And the last one in the entrepreneur toolkit. Probably my favorite way to exercise, which sounds like a strange thing, but I love to spin. And I find that if you're not healthy and fit as an entrepreneur, it's much, much harder. So I think it's critical to kind of have that self-care and that time to make sure that you're healthy as a leader and as a CEO.
That's a theme that pops up all the time when I interview entrepreneurs. And a recent CEO said that it helps him show up for work by taking care of himself. When he does show up, he gets more done. He's more productive. So I definitely can see why that's a theme.
Yeah, totally agree.
So what is the best and the worst part about working for yourself?
It's a good question. The best part is that I have control over how I want to spend my time and how I want to spend my day, right? And I get to do really, really, really interesting things. I remember being a kid and even coming up through banking, I was bored until the day that I started my company. The kind of sense that I remember as a kid is boredom. And my mother and I have these conversations about boredom. And she's like, yeah, until the day you started your company, you're really never challenged. You're always bored. So I think that not being bored is probably one of the best things and getting control how I spend my time and the people that I spend my time with. That's just an incredible part of being an entrepreneur. The worst is probably having to make, you know, the end all be all decisions, right? Where at the end of the day, I empower my executive team. Our board has a lot of input in our business, but everything falls on my shoulders, right? If we make a mistake or if someone in my company makes a mistake, that's not on them. It's on me, right? And it's on me. Either I could have coached them better or led them better or, you know, seen something that I didn't see. So that can be hard, right? There's a loneliness aspect to being a CEO and to being an entrepreneur that I would say you don't have if you work for someone else,
yeah.
Right? The buck stops with them.
Sure. So how do you combat that loneliness?
Yeah, you have great network, right? I've got a great network of CEOs that we go out and have a glass of wine and we talk about it and we share stories. I've got a great board. I've got a great executive team. So I think you surround yourselves with people that can really be helpful. But at the end of the day, it's still on your shoulders,
sure.
Right? And that's the blessing
the
and the curse of entrepreneurship.
In. Sure.
Yeah.
So have you ever hired family or friends?
So my co-founder, Justin Hughes, and I have known each other pretty much since I was born. He's a couple of years older than I am, but he started as a family friend, is now, you know, a great colleague, you know, just one of my favorite people in the whole world. So yes. Beyond that, not too many. You know, I've hired people to do some small projects here and there, but
would you recommend
it?
And if you would, any words of wisdom going into it?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't. Not necessarily because it's been my own experience, but I'm in a CEO networking group and there's a lot of horror stories about working with family. It's family specifically. I think friends are a little bit different. Sometimes it works out great. Sometimes it doesn't work out. But for me, my personal relationships are so important that I wouldn't want to jeopardize them.
Sure. So when making a tough decision, do you go more with your gut or research or a little bit of both?
Depends on the decision. We're very data-driven and data-oriented at Realty Mogul. So we always try and get as much data as we possibly can, right? What do we have that can inform us on how we're going to make a decision? But then from there, you're making a gut call, right? So I'd say that I try and have an informed gut would be how I make decisions.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
So who would you say is your number one mentor?
My number one mentor is probably our COO. She's incredible. She started the organization as our controller, came up the ranks of the organization, now pretty much runs our company, you know, quote unquote reports to me, but there's a partnership there, right? Where we're running the business together. We have very different strengths, very different skill sets. And I learn something from her every day. And that's a really, really exciting piece of our organization is that I'm learning from the people around me. It's not like I had to go, you know, outside and find some mentor who had been doing this for 20 or 30 or 40 years. I find that when you're in the trenches with someone and they really understand the business and they really understand the challenges, I learned a tremendous amount. So.
What would you say is a typical week for you if there is a typical week?
Typical weeks are hard. I'd say in the mornings, it's, you know, something healthy and a green smoothie. That's like the consistency in my week, maybe, if I'm in Los Angeles. I travel a lot. You know, we have offices all over the country, Utah, Atlanta, New York. So I'm usually on a plane at least, you know, once every other week. But it's really, it's meeting with people, right? It's meeting with people. It's asking challenging questions. It's trying to coach folks on how to make decisions and really provide input where I can provide input, but also step back and allow my executive team and the VPs and the directors at our organizations to really make the day-to-day decisions, but spending enough time with them that they understand our culture and they understand, you know, how we can help coach them to making the decisions that we would deem to be good decisions in our company.
Well, we're going to talk more about building the company when we come back, including that team that you're talking about.
Sure.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free. No credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's RANK to 79645.
Hello.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where I am talking to the CEO of RealtyMogul.com. So where did you come up with the idea for your company?
So I was working in banking at the time, sort of a recovering banker, if you will, and the Jobs Act came out. So the Jobs Act is the piece of legislation that allowed for crowdfunding, the idea of raising capital on the internet. And so I saw this new legislation come down the pike and I said, there's got to be an opportunity here, right? Anytime that there's new political legislation, there's always new business creation, right? You saw it with Obamacare and healthcare and all these new companies that cropped up. And so I saw that piece of legislation and I thought to myself, I want to do this for real estate, right? I want to build a company where we can raise capital on the internet to invest in real estate, something that's really tangible, something you can touch, that you can feel, that you can really invest in, but do it all at the comfort of your own home. So that's really what was the catalyst for the business.
Yeah. And now I know you secured funding yourself. So tell me a little bit about the fundraising process and what you've learned from it.
Yeah. So fundraising is really, really interesting. I mean, across the capital that we've raised for our company and the capital that we've raised to invest in real estate through Realty Mogul, I've been involved in raising $350 million in the last handful of
years. Amazing. The
first $1 million I ever raised was the hardest. I mean, it's still hard, right? It's never easy to raise money, but the first million was definitely the hardest. I had 100 coffee meetings. I don't drink coffee.
tea instead.
No tea, no caffeine.
Oh,
and it was like, you know, $10,000, $25,000 at a time, right? We went on from there to raise $45 million in total in venture capital. So we've raised a lot of venture capital to operate the business, you know, the parent company and the business entity. And really, it's about building a great business. It's about being passionate about the business. It's about having a great story to tell of what you're going to do and what you're trying to build. And I think it's also about perseverance, right? Had I not done those 100 coffee meetings and raised the first $1 million to operate our company, we would have no company. So, you know, for me, the word no doesn't mean no. It just means maybe later.
Not yet. Yeah,
yeah, maybe later.
Maybe later.
Right? Maybe,
sure.
But later. So you go back to that person and you build a relationship. And but that's what raising capital is all about.
Yeah. Now, you're not the first entrepreneur who has said that the first million is the hardest. So
yeah.
Elaborate what you mean by that.
Well, you don't have much to stand on, right? I mean, when I was raising our first $1 million of capital, we didn't have a real business. We hadn't launched our website. We were sort of toying around and building technology, but we didn't exactly know what we were going to build. We didn't have a dollar of revenue. We didn't have any clients. I had never been an entrepreneur before. So if you looked at my resume, you know, you didn't scream CEO. It screamed kind of banker, big company, kind of stuffy organization. So, you know, people had to take a leap of faith, right? They had to look at me and say, Is this a woman who's going to persevere when it gets tough? Is this a woman who's going to, you know, hear no 1,000 times and still wake up in the morning and go to work and make it happen? So it's really, really tough. And I heard a lot of no's.
So what do you think was the key to convincing investors that you were going to be that woman?
Kind of goes back to perseverance, right? It was great follow-up too. Great follow-up, you know, going after every investor that I met with and, hey, it was great to meet with you. You know, are you interested? Pushing for an answer, pushing for a close. You know, the worst angel investors in the world are those that just won't give you an answer. I'll take a quick no any day. That's a great investor,
yeah,
right? You're not an investor in me, but
yeah,
you just move on, right?
Sure.
So I think great follow-up, great communication skills, and forcing people to make a decision, right? Saying to them, hey, you've got till Friday to make this decision, or I'm not going to hold this open for you anymore, right? I'm not going to hold this slot open. Didn't mean I had anybody else to fill the slot. Just meant that I needed a decision from them so that I could move on and use my time more wisely.
Yeah, you can put the pressure on them a little bit
you
as well.
Try.
Yeah,
you can try.
You can try. Okay. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your team. First of all, how many
sure.
employees do you guys have?
So we've got about 80 people at the company, and that's split across our technology team, our product team, our real estate team, our marketing team, and then sort of our operations teams, finance, accounting, et cetera.
So I know that you wish that you would have hired more quickly. So
yeah.
Who were those kind of key players in the beginning?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I was doing almost all of our sales efforts, right? I was working with real estate companies all over the country to drive in deals. And I think that if I hired, you know, some more salespeople earlier on, it would have allowed me to focus in other areas of the business. But, you know, hiring is one of the key challenges. We're pretty slow to hire even today as an organization. So we want to find people that are the right cultural fit. We want to find people that are going to really help us grow the organization and you know, enjoy it as well. For me, hiring is a two-way street. I want to hire someone who's going to be happy and someone that we're going to be happy with. But we've got an incredible team today. I'm really, really proud of the team that we've assembled.
So do you agree with the philosophy, hire slow, fire fast?
I don't know that I totally agree with that philosophy. Sometimes you have to hire fast, right? When you're in rapid growth mode, sometimes you have to hire fast. And I always believe in coaching rather than just firing someone off the bat, right? I think that, you know, I've learned a lot and grown a lot as an executive. I think that people can learn and grow when you give them the time and the space and the energy and the dedication. So we really try and coach people, right? Is there an opportunity for them to do something different at the organization that may be better for their skill set? You know, if you have to fire someone, you have to fire them, right? Because at the end of the day, you're doing a service to them. You're allowing them to go find a better opportunity for themselves. But I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, hire super slowly and hire super quickly.
Lots
right?
of nuances
somewhere in the middle.
To
somewhere
that.
In the middle.
Philosophy.
Yeah.
So you said that there are three characteristics you really care about. Humble. What are the other two?
Humble, hungry, and smart.
Humble, hungry, and smart. Love that. So how do you measure that when you are trying to hire someone?
Yeah. So it's hard, right? And I've gotten it wrong many times and I will continue to get it wrong. And you just got to kind of plug away. But, you know, I look for brute force intelligence. That's what I mean when smart. So I'll ask people in interviews to tell me about current events. Right? It has nothing to do with the job, but I want to know sort of, are they curious? Not necessarily do they sit down and they read the news every morning, but are they having those conversations, right? Do they have an opinion? Do they have a stance? You know, what do they think about whatever's going on in the world?
Well, you ask like about a specific current event or just in general?
Depends. You know, sometimes I might walk in and say, you know, hey, did you hear about the fire that was raging? And then we start talking about a fire. Or other days, you know, hey, did you hear about something silly that the president said, or, you know, whatever it might be. It just depends on the day and depends on what I'm thinking about, right? And the conversation that I've had the night before with friends or colleagues or otherwise. So I'm trying to sort of test curiosity there. Mm. You know, how curious are they about the world? Do they have an opinion about things like that? And then you can typically figure out if someone's humble when they're walking you through their background. You know, I love to hire people who have come up the ranks in specific organizations in the same organization. And the way that they describe it, you can get sort of that aura of humbleness or not. And then hungry is hard. Hungry is really hard because most people come across as really, really hungry in an interview. We do assessments. So for every role at our company, we have someone do an actual assessment. For example, if you're, you know, going to come in for a technology role, we'll have you write code, right? And we'll actually review that code. If you're hungry, you're going to do the assessment. If you're not hungry, you're going to say, hey, I'm really not interested. I don't want to go through the testing. So folks tend to sort of opt themselves out of our process as a result of that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So what would you say has been the biggest challenge as an entrepreneur?
Biggest challenge as an entrepreneur, I'd say it's the same as kind of the biggest opportunity, which is people, right? At the end of the day, every business and every CEO and every entrepreneur, it's always about people. And you're managing people. People don't come with a guidebook, right? There's no, you know, there's plenty of books that have been written about people and management and all those types of things, but everybody's different. Everybody has a different motivation. I think one of the key things that I really needed to learn and I'm continuing to learn is to read people and read and understand what they need as quickly as I possibly can. So all of my executives have different styles. You know, some of them want me to text them. Some of them want me to email them. Some of them want me to pick up the phone and call them. Some of them are great on email. Some of them are terrible on email. So it's figuring that out is really, really, really hard because everybody is different.
Yeah. Well, we're going to end on a fun note. And that is, if you weren't an entrepreneur, what job would you want to have?
I'd do something in healthcare. So I'm really passionate about nutrition, functional medicine, the idea that, you know, the body needs nutrients, right? And food and proper food and proper health. Either run a healthcare company or work for a healthcare company or impact the lives of people. Not through money, like Realty Mogul and sort of passive investing, but through healthcare and nutrition.
Well, congratulations on all of your success. And thank you so much for stopping by and sharing your business wisdom. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. Right now, get your first month's supply for free. All you pay is just $5 for your medical consultation when you go to 4hims.com/doctor. After that, it's just $30 for a month's supply. Sure beats paying big bucks for just one blue pill, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need an awkward in-person doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Hims has doctors online who can prescribe the medication, and a pharmacy sends it right to your door. It's affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to this exclusive address, 4hims.com/doctor. That's 4hims.com/doctor for your first month for just $5. 4hims.com/doctor.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My guest today is Tony Del Mercado, the COO of Hawk Media. It's great to have you, brother.
It's great to be here. I love the double guns every time. It makes me feel welcome.
Del Mercado.
That's great.
So give us a recap. COO of Hawk Media, what do you guys do?
Digital marketing agency. We've positioned ourselves as an outsourced CMO and full digital marketing team. Month to month, a la carte contracts, easy to work with, pretty good at driving growth.
How do you guys, you just said driving growth. So how do you guys drive growth? One of the hardest things for most companies, I do consulting myself, I go into businesses, and I would say the number one thing they want help with, and they'll ask it or word it in a different way, but it's generating and converting leads more consistently so their income can be scalable and predictable. So how do you guys drive leads in your business?
On behalf of clients or for ourselves?
Let's do both.
Okay.
Because it's different. I'm sure it's one's B2C, one's B2B.
Yeah. So on behalf of clients, we work with a lot of e-commerce companies, people that are selling something online at different price points. We sell $1,200 sneakers all the way down to $15 shower products or whatever, right? And helping all of those grow online. I think what's important is to build a good, solid mousetrap. Have a good product, good brand, good website. Make sure you've got a good conversion opportunity and then good retargeting, good email marketing. And then from there, you can layer traffic acquisition on top with like good message match, landing pages, social proof, and those kinds of things. That's the blueprint, give or take, right? Okay. in the B2B space or in the SaaS space or in driving mobile installs, it's a little bit different. For us at Hawk
Media, just a little bit different.
A little bit different. There's longer sales cycles. There's longer, you know, sort of lead nurturing cycles. For us at Hawk, what we've found a lot of success with is my business partner, fortunately, is very much a mover and a shaker, beater of the drum, waver of the flag. And so we've split the business in a very clear way where that's what he does. We also have a sales team with business development people in Seattle and Chicago and San Francisco and Austin and LA. And we've used HubSpot for automated marketing efforts and kind of lead nurturing and things like that. And then we've kind of from an old school scripting sales mentality, we've tried to really make everything programmatic and manage around a program as opposed to managing around sort of an ideal.
Yeah.
But yeah, we try and be really visible. We throw a lot of events. We nurture leads. We try to be value added. We do free consultations. We do as much as we can for free or for close to free that affords us the opportunity to have conversations with people that might convert to paying customers.
Yeah.
that just puts us in a good position.
What do you guys do for the events? Because I'm so curious. Events are a very expensive thing.
Yep.
Like, well, they can be. They're not all, but events typically are expensive and they're very tedious and hard to put together. So just give me a quick contextual example. How do you guys capitalize on events?
Yeah, so we've been doing an event at a place called 41 Ocean on Ocean Ave in Santa Monica here for, 3 years, something like that. It's more of a hang, honestly. People come out, they drink at the bar. There might
just
be
like a
couple speakers.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, there might be a couple speakers. But I think what's really important is to understand the folks that you're trying to meet, right? For us, that's specifically a digital marketing meetup, right? We're doing an event downtown Los Angeles. It'll be our second one that's specifically fashion e-commerce, right? We want to make sure that we're targeting people that could potentially be clients for us or could just benefit from knowing who we are and then be advocates and evangelists for us out in the world. I really think that where people make mistakes on events, there's just too many people talking, too much lip service talking heads up at the stage. Mm. I think for the most part, if you get the right people in the room, deliver a couple high quality messages, maybe a panel, and then mix and mingle. That's what people are there for.
Yeah, for sure.
That's my two cents, right?
Let's talk about hiring. You have about, 60 employees?
Yeah, just about.
Okay, so how do you guys find great talent and then retain the great talent? What does your process look like?
Yeah, so find the great talent. We have a good smattering of like a giant ZipRecruiter account with a whole bunch of opportunities sitting out there at pretty much all times, as well as great. I think the fact that we create a nice, fun place for people to work leads to a lot of other referrals, right? For lack of a better way of explaining that, is we just get referred a lot of great resumes and a lot of interesting people. We also have a quarterly review structure and promote from within kind of structure. So we don't hire at market rate. I mean, I'll say it right now, in front of everybody, we hire for less than market rate categorically. But the upside and the opportunity for advancement based on merit, it's a huge meritocracy. Mm. That's helped us recruit some really, really strong talent that we have no business talking to.
You're doing it based on the possibility of what could be versus what has been.
Yeah, exactly. Not just what could be, but also come heck or high water, we're going to sit down every 90 days and we're going to talk about it. Right?
Because a lot of people will say, well, hire me and pay me this much because of what I have done.
Don't
but
do it.
You guys are basically saying, hey, screw that. I don't care about what you have done. It's nice.
It's
and
nice.
It gives me a great reference of what could be, but I'm going to hire you about, you said less than face dollar. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I'm going to let you prove yourself and you could earn way more than what you have.
And once a quarter, really, what does that boil down to? There's, however many weeks, and then you take out the
weeks.
And so it's like, every 50 some working days, you're going to have an opportunity to prove to me that you've done a good enough job to get paid more
in advance.
And, if you polled everybody at Hawk, which I'm not asking you to, but if you did, I think most of them would say that they're pretty stoked about their compensation and where they've moved up from there. So it's a cyclical thing. You've got happy people that work there, and then they in turn refer other happy people that work there or could potentially work there. And even when people are walking through the office for an interview, they're like, it's a little bit different, right?
So we talked about how you guys are finding them, and we kind of alluded to how you're retaining them with compensation. So let's dive into how you're retaining them, and then let's shift gears and talk about how do you know when it's the right time to fire somebody? But first, how do you retain them?
So retention to me is like, it's all a big secret. It's not really a huge secret. It's just like, create a place that people want to go every day, right? They're solving problems. They're intellectually challenged. They are seeing their friends. They're compensated, not just financially, but emotionally
and
high fives. And if you create an environment
like
that. It
seems like common sense.
It seems like it,
right? But you go into, it's a ballpark. My opinion as a consultant with small businesses, 8 out of 10 small businesses, maybe 7 out of 10 with the ones I've worked with, they don't really have that environment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 34 years old, and so I think I'm on the high end of the millennial, right? But I think if you look at 25, 24, recently college graduated, all the way up to, late 20s, they don't want to work somewhere for 35 years and get a gold watch.
The average millennial is going to have 16 jobs.
Right, exactly. So, if you're not, and I'm not trying to, pander to people. It's like, hey, there's ping pong and tacos, right? It's like, those are consequences of an environment that we've created, but I think they're gimmicky unless they're authentic and part of your core values, right?
100%. I agree, yeah. Tony Del Mercado is my guest. He's the COO of Hawk Media. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do here. And I'm curious, we said company retention, how you hire them, how you retain them. The question I alluded to was how do you know when to fire them?
How do you guys do that? It's tough. It's tough. I actually had an article published recently about how to or when to fire that person that you really like who's killing your company.
And you spent time and energy and money training them and investing it in them.
It's a biggie, but it's that whole idea of like don't throw good money after bad or good time after after bad. And we have three core values, which I've alluded to, which are
get stuff done,
learn quickly, be cool. Okay. So where we've had to let people
which go... Which are very millennial value cork.
Where we've had to let people go is around one of those three. There's a guy that I can remember distinctly. I really like him. USC grad, so cool, learned quickly, was just on point with everyone, really easy.
But he wasn't cool. Just
couldn't get stuff done. He was super cool. Yeah, great to get along with. We just couldn't just continually execute. So we had to cut him loose. And that's hard, right?
You got a cool guy.
Cool guy, learns quickly.
Learns
but just
quick.
Can't get the ball across the finish line, right?
Then you got to micromanage and that's...
And so that's a danger to us. And we had another guy, excellent at execution, excellent in learning quickly, just not cool under pressure. Cool 70% of the time, but when there was a looming deadline.
But in a different context.
Yeah, just tough to get along with or verbally or abusive to other people or not respectful. And so for us, that's hard. And then when we do have to cut the cord, I learned a long time ago, actually, when I was 15 years old, a girlfriend's dad was an executive at American Express. And he said, if you ever have to let somebody go, own it, tell them it's on you, tell them why. Give them the best and then let them go. And the other thing is Reid Hoffman had a Netflix deck that I think is pretty well known now that said adequate performance gets generous compensation. Mm. And that's kind of our philosophy.
I love that. I'm curious for you, what was one of the worst jobs you ever had? You talked about some of the businesses. You talked about some of the jobs. You talked about the job that really kind of changed your success and put you on the trajectory of the path you're on now, which was Cutco Knives. But did you ever have a job that you just hated? Like maybe you worked at, and has nothing against it, but maybe you worked at McDonald's or maybe you were a janitor. Nothing against those jobs, but just giving you an example.
Yeah, I think I've been very fortunate to like most of the jobs that I've had. I spent a summer doing demolition, construction demolition, swinging a sledgehammer through walls and breaking stuff.
That sounds kind of fun for a short period of time.
Very awesome for a short period of time. And it was amazing. Me and my best friend, so it worked out super great. But towards the end of the summer, they had us doing something called tending brick, which really means that you just carry brick up and down scaffolding and mix mud. And that sucked. That was no fun at all.
Last thing as we come to a wrap here, just what is your advice for the aspiring entrepreneur who's with us right now? And they have a 9-to-5 job and it's their only source of income. They have an idea. They're always tuned in. They love listening to different entrepreneur shows like ours at Business Rockstars. And they're trying to put the pieces together to get started.
It's not...
If you're only working 9-to-5, that's not...
Yeah, you're not doing it right, right? I mean, if you're working 40 hours a week, there's another 40 available at least, right? I think that figuring out what is a great lever on your time and then pulling that lever really hard. And also don't dabble, right? Dabbling's for buffets. When you're talking about your income or building a business, do something you're passionate
master
about,
it and
right? And
it.
Be a boss at it. Until you're world class objectively, don't even bother throwing your hat in the ring. A long time ago, somebody told me there's some kid at Stanford that's eating ramen, sleeping on a couch that's just going to eat your lunch. You know?
Sounds like Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that. Tony says, find your passion and be a boss at it. Tony Del Mercado in the house. I appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Reaching consumers in a personal way can mean big returns. Here are a few reasons you should make mobile marketing a priority. I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, mobile reaches a newer, broader audience. Did you know some people don't use desktops and laptops any longer? An increasing number of people use mobile devices exclusively. Number two, social media offers ad platforms. Facebook and other platforms have realized the potential of mobile marketing. They've evolved their ad platforms to allow you to easily target mobile customers. You can get started simply by clicking a button. Number three, it's personal. Brands always look to get closer to their target audience, but it's hard to do that from behind a computer screen. Mobile devices are different. You don't get the same psychological effect with any other media. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Business Rockstars.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. We've all heard the saying, your network is your net worth. So we're going to find out from David if you think that's true. My guest is David Dobkin, the president of investment banking at ASMX Capital. It's great to have you.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. Your network is everything for your business. There's absolutely no company on earth that did it all by itself, or one entrepreneur who did it all by itself.
Yeah.
He had to have other people help. And so those relationships, those capabilities, those knowing the people who he needs to know when he doesn't know them, and making sure that he can connect.
So if I'm starting from scratch and I'm an aspiring entrepreneur, I'm just getting in the entrepreneurial game, I don't really know many people, my friends, my family, maybe they're not entrepreneurs either. And I don't know where to start. Do I reach out on email? Do I go to events? What do I do? How do I find these new people just to be friends or partners?
The easiest and best thing that is available to you is the internet right now. You can be connected to anybody on earth relatively quickly.
Almost instantly.
And there's nothing you lose by trying to reach out and contacting the person that you think is going to help you.
The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to hear no, or you're not going to hear a response at all.
Right. And if you're persistent and you write a good email and explain your situation, as an entrepreneur myself, if I get an email like that in my inbox, it doesn't matter how that person figured out how to get to me. I'm very excited. And generally, at the end of my day or my weekend, when I have time to look at some emails, I'll type out a response to them. And I'll say, here, this is my phone number. Give me a call, whatever. Because I want to empower you. I've gone through the journey. I've been there. I've been at the bottom. I've had failure companies. I've had success companies. And I know what it's like to be an entrepreneur. And I know what it's like to start out.
And so if somebody reaches out to you in an elegant way, in a non-pushy way, and maybe even gives you a little praise because hopefully they did some research on your background, and they're asking just for like a little bit of advice or a little bit of mentorship, you're open to it.
Yeah. Mentorship is the best way to think about it. If someone's asking me for a job, I'm more likely to turn off if that someone is asking me for just some help or some advice, because that makes me feel like I'm giving back. When someone's asking me for a job, I feel like that I'm being put upon. I don't want to feel like I'm put upon. I want to feel like I'm trying to give back.
Okay. And so maybe they could ask for 2 minutes of your time, 3 minutes of your time, something short just to get started. And if it's easier and you don't want to type it out, maybe we could really quickly hop on a call, or you could send me a voice message, right?
Absolutely.
Make it as easy as possible for the person that you're asking.
Absolutely. Make it and give them every opportunity to say yes. If don't give them an out and saying, oh, if this is too much trouble, like that, that starts putting negative connotation on your email or your message is going to give me a reason to say, this person's never going to succeed anyway because he's coming at it with the wrong personality. But that's exactly right.
And the key is, if you don't ask, the answer is always going to be no anyways.
Right. And if you don't, exactly. If you don't try, you know, the same thing is you can be fearful of failure.
Which we all are, because we're literally hardwired. If you know anything about brain research and the latest research on neuroscience about how the brain works and why we do what we do, you can see because of all the years and years and years and centuries, we have been conditioned as humans to avoid pain, avoid fear. And statistically, we're 500% more inclined to want to avoid pain than we are to want to gain pleasure. And that's why advertisers and marketers tap into that all the time.
Yep.
Is
most fear and marketing.
Fear and marketing, right? Get you to avoid the pain of, or the fear, or whatever could happen. And think about insurance, right? Their whole business model is wrapped around you paying them money to avoid the potential problem that could come in the future.
That's a great business model, if you ask me.
It sure is. Yeah, I know lots of people that are.
But essentially, that's the one thing that you have to overcome.
Fear of rejection.
Is fear of rejection. Because at the end of the day, the worst that happens is nothing.
That's right.
So if you can be satisfied, if you couldn't go to a bar and just test it out like that, and if you want to talk to 7 girls and say, I'm going to get 7 phone numbers, you have to talk to 50 people to get the 7 numbers, or you have to talk to 100 people to get the 7 numbers.
Just like sales. It's a numbers game.
Eventually, you are going to break through. You're going to figure out the little minutiae in terms of being able to tailor your message such that you can walk into a room with people and have that conversation and get to common ground and get to a place where you're talking to the person that you wanted to talk to face to face. And they're listening to you because you've had that capability of being able to say, all right, this is what I want to talk to him about and get in front of his face.
I think the key is, when you're being persistent, is to do it in a fun, playful way. That's sort of like, P.S., you know, if I'm reaching out to somebody and saying, hey, I'd love to train your salespeople, for example, right? I can help increase your sales by a minimum of 20%. I've done it with 50 other companies, and I'm confident I can do the same thing with your company based on the research that I've done. All I need is 3 minutes of your time by phone to explain to you how we can do this. And really, the phone is a tactic to get the in-person meeting. But you ask something like that, and they don't respond. And they don't respond, and they don't respond, and they don't respond. And you can play with them, and you could say something along the lines of, P.S., the reason I'm so persistent is because persistency, as we both know, is the key to success. Wouldn't you like to see your salesman be more persistent, right? And do you even track how persistent your salesmen are, or do you even know when they stop? Do they stop on the second call? Do they stop on the third email? And so you can make it fun and playful and almost curiosity driven. Like, aren't you curious why I keep reaching out? I must have something good to say. It's worth 60 seconds, I promise. And if it's not, the worst you lost is 60 seconds. And at the very least, you'll stop seeing my email in your inbox every week, right? You make it fun, you make it playful.
Yeah, and that's from a sales perspective. Yes, absolutely.
Like, it all depends on what you're doing, right?
When you're building a business and you need to get to somebody else like that, you know, when you have that first circle and you're able to get those first connections, then you have to be able to rely on other people to make phone calls on your behalf to qualify you and say, hey, I'm reaching out to you because so-and-so made an introduction or something like that. And so that's when you have to then it's a second step of networking where you're getting to common ground with the people that you've created that bond with. And so they might like mountain biking, or they might like the movies or something like that. And then you can have conversations about that, where something that you and that other person have in common, and it's easy for you to have a normal conversation outside of what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Because
when you're now friendly with somebody,
when you share something in common, the fastest way to build rapport, right?
Right. But then you're also getting past what it is that you and I are trying to do when we're in a business relationship. I have a goal, you have a goal, we want to get to that goal and move on to the next relationship. When I'm going out to dinner with a friend, I just want to learn what's going on with my friend.
Yeah.
I want to spend as much time as I can with my friend for that period of time until I'm going on to the next thing.
I love that. David, appreciate you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.